Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. One of the most popular musicals of all time, Disney's The Lion King, has returned to Charlotte. It opened last week for a month-long run at the Belk Theater, and later in the program, we meet the actor playing the villain, Scar, along with the puppet supervisor who makes sure that the animals on the African savanna are in tip-top shape, and we hear from the dance supervisor who has decided once the Charlotte run of The Lion King has ended, he'll be settling down here. And you can bet we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But first, the biggest story in the world for the last 2 weeks. The Paris Olympic Games concluded on Sunday. The U.S. came away with the most medals and tied with China for the most gold medals, and the Games boasted a lot of athletes from this region. WCNC-TV sports director Nick Carboni interviewed most, if not all, of those athletes, and he starts us off this hour along with Bill Spaulding. He is the regular play-by-play announcer for the New Jersey Devils hockey team, but he's been moonlighting during the Olympics as one of the track and field voices for NBC. Welcome to you both. Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
Mike, thanks for having me. Ask me anything except Olympic breakdancing, and I'll have you.
Okay. I can't figure out to this moment how that got into the Olympics, but okay. So, Nick, we have talked on this program over the last couple of weeks about local competitors who went to the Olympics this time around. There were quite a few of them. I'm just curious how did that field of local folks stack up against previous years when we've had some people in the Olympics, and how did they do?
Yeah, well, Mike, this is my third Summer Olympics covering sports here in Charlotte, and it definitely was by far the most fruitful in terms of local athletes getting medals. In 2016 in Rio, if you remember, the swim club SwimMAC had quite a few of the big name swimmers because Coach David Marsh was here. So you had Ryan Lochte and other big name swimmers of that era. But really, this year was the best year from our standpoint of people that grew up in Charlotte, went to high school in Charlotte, maybe went to college in Charlotte, going to the Olympics and coming home with medals. So we had quite a few that were either part of teams that achieved Olympic medals or individually that got medals. And I know we'll talk about a few of them.
Yeah, we had a number of people from this area who won bronze medals, at least one silver, Anna Cockrell, who we will talk about, and a few gold medalists, including the one won by Steph Curry, who played with the U.S. men's basketball team. How many medals did athletes in this area bring home? Do we have a count on that?
That's a great question. I should have probably looked that up. Steph Curry, I don't have him in my notes. Now, of course, I know, the connection there. We had Steph had a gold. He brings home a gold medal, of course, with Team USA basketball. Kaylin Brown, a 19-year-old recent graduate of Mallard Creek High School, she got a gold medal as part of a relay team. Those are the only golds that I know of, but I know we'll talk about the U.S. Performance Center as well. There's close to 60 athletes that now call Charlotte home because they train there, and they were part of 8 different Olympics teams. So to get you a hard count, it might take a little bit to figure out who exactly is a Charlotte resident, who grew up here, what medals they brought home.
Well, he may not play here professionally, but we can claim Steph Curry because he went to high school here and he went to college here and his dad came here to play for the Hornets. Not only did he play as part of the gold medal winning U.S. basketball team, he distinguished himself. I think he had the most exciting moments of the games toward the end of the last game. He was the team's top scorer in that game against France. Take us through that. It was a remarkable ending to that game.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people around here, of course, we have seen Steph win championships with the Golden State Warriors, NBA Most Valuable Player Awards, Finals MVPs. It brought us back to his days here locally at Davidson College and his run through March Madness in 2008 and how he kind of captured, at that point, the nation in our national collegiate tournament. And he kind of brought it to, he did bring it to a world stage, just that flair for the dramatic, that ability to take over the game in the final moments. And his uncanny ability to hit incredible shots. I think you take that picture that we've all seen by now of Steph hitting that shot over the gargantuan French phenom Victor Wembanyama and hang it in the Louvre down the street from where it happened. It was an iconic moment, and he's an icon in Charlotte, and he always will be. Now he's been a global icon, but he put a stamp on it. And this was his first Olympics. He was really excited to finally play in the Olympics, and he knew it was his one shot. And you saw in that semifinal game against Serbia how much it meant to him to win that and go get the gold in the next game.
And in that final game, he made 4 3-point baskets in the final 3 minutes of the game. Had he not, would we have won?
You know, I don't think you can say that they would have. I think he was the player that they needed the most out of in that moment. He admittedly didn't have the best first couple of games in Paris. His teammates kind of joked with him. Steph showed up in Paris to join us a couple of days ago before that Serbia game. So it certainly wasn't out of reach. It just basically put the game away. And as Steph said, you know, made the French go night, night, and, you know, really effectively won the gold medal for the United States. So sitting here in Charlotte, I'm going to say no, they would not have. But of course, with all the talent that the U.S. team has, it's entirely possible somebody else would have stepped up.
Another of the area athletes bringing home a gold and a silver is Kaylin Brown. She competed in several track and field events. She went to Mallard Creek High School, and you spoke with her in advance of the games, Nick.
You know, it's something that I've dreamed of for a long time, you know, going to trials and making it to the Olympics. Oh, it's something that I've always thought about. I started running when I was 3, and so maybe like 5 years old, I used to tell my teachers, like, hey, I want to go to the Olympics. And they would be like, okay, well, you can go. And so it's been a long time.
I think the music was added after the interview.
She won gold. Sometimes we spice up the Zoom interviews a little bit.
Exactly. She won gold as part of the women's team in the 4x400 meter relay. Talk about her.
Yeah, so you can tell there just the youthful excitement about not just going to the Olympics, but about traveling the world and going to Paris. And she is going to be an athlete that we are absolutely going to be keeping our eye on from Charlotte for the LA Games in 2028. 19 years old, just finished a phenomenal freshman season at the University of Arkansas. She's one of the best 19-year-old 400 runners in the past 30 to 40 years. She did not make the Olympics team in trials based on results at trials. She made it as part of the relay pool. And she assisted the mixed, that's men's and women's, 4x400 relay team, shattering a world record, unfortunately, as the anchor leg. She did get what they call walked down by the Netherlands anchor the day after, who was on fresh legs. Kaylin was not, I just want to point out. So that's going to be a nice redemption story for her in LA in 28. Still took a silver in that event and was part of the 4x400 star-studded women's team. Relay team that took home gold. She wasn't in the final race, but she had participated in some of the qualifying heats, and so she gets a gold medal. So absolutely a future star.
Nick Carbone is WCNC-TV's sports director. Bill Spaulding is also with us. Bill, they just happened to do play-by-play of track and field for the Olympics for NBC, and those events included a number of shining moments. As everybody knows, the women particularly did very well, and the women did better than the men overall in these Olympics from the USA team, at least. There were shocking moments. There were some disappointing moments. Bill, did you call Kaylin's event, too, while you were at it?
We did, yes. And I think on top of everything Nick said about her, one of the biggest positives moving forward for her will be to get this Olympics experience as a 19-year-old in the relays, because as talented as she is, we expect that she's going to be competing for individual teams down the road as well. And now she's gotten those Olympic nerves out of the way. She knows what to expect. You know, she ran two really good legs in the mixed 4x4. Her times, her split times were the same in the race where they set the world record. And the following race, as Nick mentioned, unfortunately, she just happened to have one of the best runners in the world from the Netherlands, Femke Bol, on that final leg, who did end up taking the gold medal. But I think at 19, the sky is the limit for her. And the women's 400 is a pretty wide open event internationally right now. So I think a few more years of seasoning heading to LA, she will be one of those podium favorites individually on top of all those relay teams.
for you, Bill, as somebody who studied up, and we'll talk about that, studied up a lot to get ready for these games and who call a lot of these events as they unfolded live on television, what was the high point for you? What was the low point for you in these track and field events?
Yeah, so there's a few different high points. I think, you know, the women's 400 hurdles was an amazing event. First off, just to see greatness like Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone, who's running times over hurdles that most of the best women in the world aren't running in the flat 400 meters. But I think because she is so far and away ahead of everybody else in the field, it almost is important for us to stop and realize what Anna Cockrell did in that race, winning silver as well. She may have been a second and a half behind Sydney, but she is the fourth fastest woman to ever run that event. The time that she ran at the Olympics to win a silver medal would have been the world record 3 years ago before Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone started taking it down. So, you know, that was a huge accomplishment for her. And she passed the woman from the Netherlands. We just mentioned Femke Bol, who was the heavy favorite to get silver there, to take that silver medal. So I think in terms of an individual event, that was one that really stood out for me. You know, another thing that stands out for me and is a highlight at Olympic Games is seeing all the athletes who just getting there is the mission and getting there is the accomplishment. So I did play-by-play for the morning sessions of track and field. And the first couple of morning sessions, we had the preliminary rounds of the 100-meter dashes. And that's where you get athletes from underrepresented countries who are oftentimes one of only two, maybe they're the only rep from their entire country at the Olympic Games. So that is their moment to shine. It's almost like a play-in game at the NCAA tournament. They run that preliminary round trying to get into the main event so that they can rub shoulders with all the sprint superstars. And to see the pride of those athletes on the start line, that to me really is like the Olympic Games at its core right there.
You mentioned Anna Cockrell. She's a Charlotte native who went to the last Olympics only to be disqualified in the Tokyo Games. And she spoke with WCNC's Ashley Strohline just before heading to Paris.
It's really exciting. I think that this time around, I was almost more nervous at Olympic trials than I was in 2021. I felt like in 2021, I kind of was able to sneak my way onto the team versus this year. People know who I am. They know what I've been able to run. So it was definitely more of like, it was still exciting, but more of a relief to make the team than anything else, because I knew the kind of training I'd been doing. I knew the kind of times I was ready to run. And I was just so nervous about doing it right and getting it done. And so I'm so excited that we got it done.
And she did get it done in Paris, so winning a silver medal in the women's 500-meter hurdles. It seems like a silly question, I suppose, Bill, but I know nothing about this, so I'm going to ask a silly question anyway. Because these games involve the best athletes in the world in their sports. But how tough was the competition in that event that she won silver in?
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly one of the bigger upsets on paper that she ended up with a silver medal. I think a lot of folks thought that Anna would contend for a bronze medal, but everyone built that race up as the American Sydney McLaughlin-Levrone versus the Dutch star who'd won a world championship last year, Femke Bol. And Anna ran so well. She was almost a second faster than her best ever time before that in the final, that she actually overtook Femke Bol down the stretch to finish second. And while finishing second, became the fourth fastest woman of all time. So I think it really seeing her potential start to blossom here. And it was really great to see that, because she's worked so hard. She's changed her technique to match some of the best women in the world as well. And it all paid off with the silver medal there.
Bill Spaulding did the play-by-play, I guess. He called the events, the track and field events for NBC, many of them. He normally does play-by-play for the New Jersey Devils hockey team. When we come back, I'm going to talk about how you got tapped by NBC to do this and what goes into doing it. Nick Carboni is also with us. He covered a lot of the local athletes who competed, and he has more to say as well. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Coming up, The Lion King. But first, we're talking about the Olympics that just wrapped up on Sunday and a lot of the local athletes who participated. Nick Carboni is here to cover that for us from WCNC-TV. And Bill Spaulding did play-by-play of many of the Olympic track and field events for NBC. You normally do play-by-play, Bill, for the New Jersey Devils hockey team, but this wasn't the Winter Olympics. So I'm curious why and how you got tapped to do track and field for NBC.
Yeah, this is actually my fifth Olympics with NBC. So I started back in 2016, the Rio Games. I was on what was called the swing teams, where you do a bunch of the sports you only see at the Olympics. I called judo that Olympics. I called some shooting events. From there, I did ski jumping in the 2018 Olympics. I had my first track assignment with NBC back in Tokyo, and then I did speed skating for the most recent Olympics. Before my work with the Devils, I did a lot of freelance work with NBC doing really wide array of sports. Well, so that's kind of how I fell into the Olympic role with them. But as a kid who kind of grew up on the Olympics, it's always a dream to get a chance to take part in it, you know, every 2 to 3
years. And I didn't know this until I read up on you. This is fascinating. I think people will be amazed about this. A lot of people go to wherever the Olympics are to cover them. I noticed that Tara Lipinski and Johnny Weir were in Paris for the closing ceremonies. I know that they sent Colin Jost to Tahiti to cover surfing until he hurt himself. And that's a story into himself. But there's another interesting tick in this. You covered track and field from Stamford, Connecticut. How did that work and why? Why didn't they send you to Paris?
Yeah, so actually, it's a technical wonder. The NBC Sports headquarters in Stamford, they had about 2/3 of the staff working the Olympics for NBC was working out of Stamford, Connecticut. So they have all the control rooms there, all the production is there, and then they take over a couple studios, and there are these soundproof booths that I think there's 32 of them that at different hours during the day, there might be 18 different events being called out of those booths. So we had booth 2 was our home booth for track and field every morning. And, you know, you get the feed coming in the same way you would if you were at the venue, and we're watching the feed as it happens and broadcasting what we see there. And as TV has kind of gone more and more in that remote world, it has allowed the Olympics for NBC, I think, to be more centralized and honestly a little simpler in terms of production to have so many of us based in Connecticut. But you feel like you're in the Olympic bubble anyway, because everybody there is on the same mind, all focused on the same goal. And, you know, we had a little Eiffel Tower out in front of NBC as well. So we got to feel like we were in Paris still.
You're following the trend. The next time you'll do it from home. Next Olympics, you'll do it from home. Nick Carboni is here from Channel 36. You had a chance to talk to bronze medal kayaker Evie Liebfarth. She's a two-time Olympian from Bryson City, who competed in the Tokyo Games 4 years ago, trained at the Whitewater Center, and went to Paris to compete in 3 separate events. Her father and her coach is the first person, I think, who took her on the water as a little girl. She was 3 or 4 years old. As somebody who competes all over the world and who went to the last Olympics, how much of a big deal were these games to her, Nick?
I think a very big deal, Mike. When she was first in the Olympics in Tokyo, Evie was 17 years old. She is still only 20 years old. So we talk about Kaylin Brown, as Bill mentioned, maybe getting some of those Olympics nerves out. I know for a fact that Evie had a little bit of that going into these games and tried to put less pressure on herself, even as she becomes in her sport a much bigger celebrity. She's a Red Bull athlete now. So I think to come away from these games with a medal is really just still the beginning and first steps for her as an athlete.
And here's how she explained her approach to you.
I didn't realize how nervous I would be before my first Olympic event. And I mean, it makes sense. Like, it was my childhood dream. It is my childhood dream to be out here racing at the highest level. But when that all kind of came together, I was so in my head. And this time around, I'm excited to just, you know, appreciate the journey more and just go out there and paddle how I'd paddle any other race.
Is that what led to her approach? Is that approach what led to her meddling in this race, in this year?
I think so, Mike. And you mentioned that her father, Lee, is her coach and has been basically from the beginning when she was a toddler, and they put her in a boat on the Nantahala River. Her mother, Jean, is a technical official in the sport for the Olympics. So they do things as a family. They were in Europe as a family for months ahead of the games and other competitions and just kind of settling in. And Lee told me he just wants Evie to have fun. And I think that approach worked.
When Atlanta got the Olympics a couple of years ago, there was some joking that Charlotte would soon apply for the opportunity to host. Some of that was in jest, some was not, because this is Charlotte, we want to be everything. We may never get an Olympic Games, but we do have the Whitewater Center, which has become a training center for Olympic athletes, as has the U.S. Performance Center at UNC Charlotte.
Everything is in one place. Everything that I need is in this building or is across the way in the Taekwondo building.
That's C.J. Nicholas, a member of the USA Taekwondo team. You spoke to him before the games. I don't know how that many people know about the U.S. Performance Center. I'd never heard of it. Is this just a greatly kept secret?
I think it is for now, and I think we're starting to hear more and more about it because the co-founders are Ike Belk and David Kerner, and they are very bullish about basically – in LA, they want the majority of Team USA athletes to be centered in Charlotte. This games, they had about 80 or 90 of the 600 or so Team USA athletes, which is pretty good for a facility that is still just kind of getting its wings. They house full-time eight different programs, U.S. governing sports bodies, and they work with 15 overall. So they are growing, and their big claim to fame, David Kerner's side of it, is the sports science. They have some things in there technology-wise that other locations that have been big in the past in training don't offer at the moment. And you probably recognize the name Belk. Ike Belk is the son, grandson, excuse me, of the late Irwin Belk, who is a legendary philanthropist and also U.S. Olympic Committee member. So they've got a great backing. And they're on a hard charge to bring most of the sports here to Charlotte.
Yeah, you reported that the U.S. Performance Center partners with the national governing bodies of 25 sports under the Olympic umbrella, with the eight of those teams in residence there.
The equipment in here is nowhere else in the world. What we're able to do in this weight room is measure the neurological system in a way that hasn't been done before, so you can prevent injury and maximize performance.
So 600 athletes represented the U.S. at this year's Olympics. 90 of them trained at the U.S. Performance Center here. That's about 15%, if I've done the math right. What sports were involved in training?
Yeah, so Mike, the eight that are housed there full-time, I do have to refer to my notes because that's a lot. Archery, canoe, women's field hockey, judo, men's rugby, table tennis, taekwondo, as you mentioned, and also triathlon, several triathletes in Olympics and Paralympics right now. One of the ones that we hope to have, or that we do have coming up for 2028 in LA that they're very excited about, is USA flag football is housed there as well.
Bill Spalding called, reminded that he called the track and field events for NBC, many of them. And this is not like calling the hockey games that you normally do or a football game, because there's an X number of players on a football team and you study up the week before and you know who they are and you know what positions they play. With track and field, there are hundreds of people, many of whom, as you pointed out, we've never heard of and perhaps you've never heard of. So you have to do a lot of homework. How do you do it? How do you get ready to cover these?
Yeah, I joke. It is a lot like drinking out of a fire hose, because of all the sports of the Olympic Games, athletics, which is what the IOC calls track and field, has the most country representatives as well. So I think we had close to 1,000 athletes and almost 200 countries represented. So I ended up with 184 pages of notes that I worked on over the course of the last couple months, bios on athletes, history on events. I do have to credit NBC as an amazing research team on track and field as well. And they do yeoman's work each day. They give us a wealth of information as well, which makes our jobs easier. But it's really just getting to know everything you can about each athlete, because you never know who's going to have that Olympic moment that gets out in front. And you want to make sure you have something on them, because for so many of these athletes, it is the biggest day of their lives. And, you know, it's our job to treat it like that.
Nick, we are almost out of time here, but there are probably some athletes locally who competed here that we should mention that we haven't mentioned. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to run through a list of them very quickly here.
Yeah, two of them that stand out, Nia Tapper, USA Women's Rugby. They had a historic and thrilling win for bronze. And Sierra Burdick, part of the 3x3 Women's USA Basketball team. They had a big comeback in their event for a bronze medal. Two 30-year-old athletes from here who have had long journeys and now complete those journeys with metal. So those are the two that really stand out to me right away.
And I'm assuming, Bill, that since you've done, I think, five Olympics, you said, that the next Summer Olympics will be in Los Angeles. I'm assuming they'll ask you back to do that again. Will you be in L.A. or will you be in Connecticut?
I don't know. I certainly hope so. And between now and then, the Winter Olympics is only about 18 months away. So I know we're all looking forward and excited for Milan Cortina as well. The U.S. has some young stars in sports like speed skating that'll hopefully ignite everybody's excitement in the wintertime as well.
Bill Spaulding, who did play-by-play for many of the track and field events in this year's Olympics for NBC. You can hear him as the play-by-play announcer for the New Jersey Devils if you're in the area in the future. And Nick Carboni, who augmented coverage of NBC's excellent coverage with excellent local coverage of their own at WCNC-TV, where he is sports director. Thank you both for joining us. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.